I'm Nicolette Thomas, and this is my podcast, Watching with Friends. Every week, we watch and discuss a show or movie, and I invite a friend or two to join in. Today, on this very spooky, special holiday edition of Watching with Friends, we are going to be discussing Halloween Town. It's Halloween night, and all Marnie wants to do is go out with her friends to celebrate her favorite holiday. Her mom, Gwen, is not a fan of the holiday and says no. Feeling defeated, Sophie, her younger sister, says that someone is coming, though no one ever comes up to the Piper household on Halloween. But to everyone's surprise, Grandma Aggie shows up. Aggie is clearly the reason why her daughter Gwen does not like Halloween. She is into the same spooky and interesting Halloweeny things as Marnie. Aggie spends her time dressing the kids up and doing the Halloweeny things that they all wanted to do, and reads them a bedtime story about Halloween Town. The kids go to sleep, and the adults go downstairs to have a discussion. Aggie wants to have Marnie join her in Halloween Town to start her witch training before Marnie loses her powers forever. Gwen does not want this. She wants her children to be normal. Marnie observes Aggie doing magic, and Aggie returns home to Halloween Town. Marnie gets Dylan, and they decide to follow their grandmother to her home. Unbeknownst to them, their little sister Sophie follows along. Halloween Town is filled with many different people, and they encounter the town's mayor, Calabar, and Benny, the taxi driver. Benny brings them to Grandma's house, and they get to see Aggie in her natural habitat in Halloween Town. Aggie is concerned. There is a darkness coming to town, and now with her young magical grandchildren, she may stand a chance of actually defeating whatever it is. She gets to show the kids around, seeing her favorite spots, and they run into Luke, who has changed since he has changed. Gwen realizes that her children are missing and follows them also to Halloween Town, where she had left years before. The kids find out that their mom and Calabar had had a relationship before Gwen had left to the mortal realm and met their father. Gwen is forcing her kids to go back to the world that they had just left behind, but the buses are not running, so they have to stick around town for a little while. Gwen and Aggie end up being frozen in a moment by the evil sorcerer that Aggie had been warning Gwen about. So Marnie, Sophie, and Dylan have to figure out the potion to rid the town of Halloween Town of this darkness. The family is able to use the Cromwell magic and defeat evil in the end. And all is well in Halloween Town. After this brief message, we will be back with Sarah to discuss our thoughts on the movie.
Love. It's Halloween
Town. I mean, it's a classic.
How can you not love it? It is. Like, even every time it's on, I have to watch it. Like, no matter how old I get, I have to watch all of them, too. Not just, like, one. I usually end up binging all of them.
Same. It was hard not to
because, continue. Like, you can't just stop after one. Although, some of them I could do without, but you're just like, okay.
But today we are just talking about the first one. So, originally from 98? Yes, 98.
Yeah. Fourth. Oh, my God.
The fourth Disney
Channel original movie. No, it couldn't have been from 98.
Yes, because 97 was under wraps. This was the first Disney Halloween after that one.
Oh, my God, I'm so old. I can't believe I was 8 when this came out. Yeah, 8 has 8. Oh, my God. But on the other hand, this would be such a cool life. Like, yeah, cool to have a witch grandma. Although I think I'd behave the same way as Marnie did, finding out that, like, there's a whole other world she actually doesn't know about.
See, and that's, again, where I think our friendship, because I could definitely see you being like Marnie. Whereas I'm much I'm more like Sophie. And I'm just like quietly behind.
Yeah. I would so be into this. And I'm not a huge Halloween person in general, but like Avi, all the Halloween Town movies, Hocus Pocus, which is filming in Rhode Island, by the way. Just saying.
apparently that was on the news in Tennessee.
Really?
Yeah, my mom was like, oh my God, Mario Hilari was on my news. So it was like being home, and I was like, oh my God.
Oh my God. That's when you know you've hit it big time, is when they start filming in Rhode Island, and you're like, wow. Okay.
So, of course, it's about
Marnie Piper. Where do you want to start?
Well, it's about Marnie Piper, who is 13 years old, and is her favorite day of the year. It's Halloween. And her mom won't let her go to the Halloween party.
Yeah. And her mom, if I remember correctly, I was kind of dozing in and out today while I was watching it because I worked early. But anyway, if I remember correctly, her mom's kind of against Halloween in a way. Not that they don't celebrate it. She's just not like...
Oh, no, they don't celebrate it. Like, they don't even allow trick-or-treaters come to the house.
That's right, yeah. So it's like her mom's totally against Halloween, where it's like kind of funny to see where like Marnie wants to decorate and have go to a Halloween party and be part of this Halloween, and like her mom's just like, no, not gonna happen.
It's very reminiscent of those like Christian households that won't let their kids read Harry Potter.
Oh my God, yeah. Because like Satan and witchcraft and...
it very much felt magic. Like that. Yeah but you have little Sophie at the window just saying someone's coming and
breaks my heart. Like every time I watch it, I feel so sad, because it's like being that person who like you invite people to a party and then no one shows up and you're just sitting there waiting and you're like, maybe someone will show up.
But I just, that fight that they have before, of course, Grandma gets there and everything really starts, where Marty like says your daughter is a, oh gosh, something about a wall creature, and then I'll be a potato. Like, you want us to be vegetables, I'll be a potato. But, Marnie, vegetables, like, potatoes are dangerous. It's so funny.
Yeah. Like, I remember that. I can't remember the actual argument, like, what was actually said, but it's true. And how, like, she's kind of ruining their childhood because they won't let, like, her mother won't let them do Halloween at all.
Right.
And then along comes Grandma Debbie Reynolds,
Oh my god, I love like, Debbie Reynolds.
She's the perfect person for this role. Like, I would not have chosen any other. Like, Betty White wouldn't even be good for this role. Debbie Reynolds is totally good for this role.
And we'll get to this.
Betty White would be more funny, but
no, I think Debbie Reynolds is perfectly funny. Like, she's charming.
Yeah. Well, no, I do. I think she's Oh, definitely. Like, I totally agree. She's perfect for Aggie, Grandma Aggie.
And we'll talk about this in the later episodes when we talk about Return to Halloween Town. But I forget what the professor's name is, but that was friends with Grandma Aggie when they were younger. She was perfectly cast because they were similar personalities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just love, like, which you could we see can't them always being say, best friends.
Oh, yeah. But you can't always say that about Disney casting for the DCOMs. But this perfect casting, even Marnie was like, Kimberly J. Brown was so good for this role.
Yes. Like, I think that entire family was cast beautifully. Perfect. Like, I can't see anyone else.
Yeah, like, I would never replace any of them. Except for when they replaced Marnie in the later episodes. But, like, that's just not right. But no, she didn't want to do it anymore. So. Anyway.
That wasn't her. That was Disney.
No?
Yeah, Disney asked her back. So
damn you, Disney.
Disney has a lot of answers for that one. But back to this one. So we have Grandma comes in, brings in
the carpet bag.
Yes. Sorry, my cat is just being a wackadoo. You can't choose what toy?
No, it's very hard to choose a toy to play with.
She literally has the koala, the beaver, and the pineapple, and she's batting all three. Yeah, I hear she's you. Never... Did you hear her yell? She just ran off and went,
"Wah!" No.
But, so Grandma comes in, brings this giant bag of candy. Mm-hmm.
And her carpet bag, which I love.
I love that it's kind so of a cute.
It's so, like, grandma-esque.
Well, it's a throwback to Mary Poppins and her carpet bag, which I love because Mary Poppins is my favorite Disney movie.
Totally.
So I've always enjoyed
like it's
that.
Such like a grandma-esque thing.
Yeah, and she's
such
just
a
like,
grandma-esque thing.
But she's pulling out all these decorations and all these costumes, and I just love. I don't know what the brother is supposed to be because Marnie's a witch.
Yep.
Sophie's a ghost.
Wasn't he supposed to be a mummy or something?
No, he's like a giant like troll or a goblin or something. It's a big strange costume. But
but he is a strange child in this movie anyway. He's like the middle geeky.
He is the quote unquote normal one.
Because in that family. For that family, normal. And then like the little sister's just like all into like nothing scares her. She's like, she's a follow behind, but like also for a 7-year-old, she's brave as shit. Like I was 7, I was never that brave. Like she's just like badass.
Yeah. But so Mom's not happy with the situation.
Mm-mm.
And we now find out that Mom and Grandma get into fights every time they're together. And
I think this fight was bigger than the ones they led us to believe that this fight was bigger than the ones that they've had in the past, because Aggie makes a point of saying that Marnie is now at the age where she can start training to be a witch because she's 13 now, and
it's the final year that Marnie would have powers if she
get her
didn't
powers
train.
Or something. Yeah,
yeah. So
Yeah. So it's like an important, it was an important year for her. Like, yeah, she needed to do this, or she, hi, kitty. Kitty wants to be in the, oh, her butt. So yeah, it was like this one, you could totally tell that, like, alongside Marnie finding out that they actually fight every Halloween, but like this is a bigger fight between Aggie and Gwen, because of how Marnie's of the age, and you know, her mom's so against Halloween, and Aggie is so like into Halloween
because she is a Cromwell witch.
Cromwell witch, which is one of the most powerful witches in Halloween Town. Throwing that out there too. But so, and I think Aggie, like, this whole thing starts because not this whole thing starts, but like Aggie always reads them a bedtime story called Halloween Town, which is literally about the place she lives. It's like it would be telling you about how, where you live in real life.
Yeah.
All the goblin and like reading, telling a bedtime story about the Hundred Acre Woods, and then like realizing the person telling you literally is from the Hundred Acre Woods.
Yeah. So grandma's gonna go. You find out that it's only on Halloween that grandma can come and go. And so Marnie, Dylan follow her and stow away on the bus.
Well, and then we find out Zoe followed, Sophie followed them too. We don't know at first, but
yeah. Sophie is she the like, best she's like little sneak.
Super stowaway. That girl no one knew until it was already too late.
Just damn stealth.
She's a bat. She would be such a good ninja. Like, you wouldn't know she was there.
Agreed.
Seven-year-old ninja. Oh, God.
But so they find themselves in Halloween Town, and Dylan believes that he is dreaming or that he's had a psychotic break, and Marnie is just living it up. And they get to...
Sophie is too in her own way. But
yes. Because she is still in her own way. She's not like as hype.
Right. She still believes in, you know, the Tooth Fairy.
Who we see.
Yes, we do see. Surprisingly. Halloween Town is like every holiday character all meshed into one with Halloween characters. It's like the coolest place ever. It would be like, I would love to go to an actual Halloween Town, which they actually still keep it up in Oregon where they filmed the movie. They actually still have like pretty much most of the set up, and people can go to Halloween Town.
Oh, that's so cool.
Which I think is so cool. Like, if I could get out of work for that long, I'd totally go.
So,
but
in Halloween Town, they're trying to figure out how to get to grandma's house, and they come across the mayor. Mayor Calabar.
Oh. Who will be a reoccurring character in the other shows.
Yeah, but he's very charming. And he definitely likes to play it up, especially when he finds out that they're Aggie's grandkids. Because
don't we find out later in the show? Yeah, I was just going to say, don't we find out later in the show that Calabar had a thing for Gwen when they were both in like younger in Halloween Town or something like that? Yes.
So Gwen and Calabar had a romance, but then Gwen went to the mortal world on Halloween, went to a Halloween party, and met the kid's dad.
Blew that whole thing out of the water. I mean, it's cute. Love story. Tale as old as time. But, however, she should have stayed in Halloween Town.
But then Marnie and Sophie and
they Dylan wouldn't have existed.
And then we wouldn't have had a main character to follow.
Yep. Oh, and can we talk about Benny, the cab driver?
Yes. Let's talk about Benny, because he was my next point.
Well, I was just going to say, they see Aggie getting on a bus and going to her house. So anyway, then we meet Benny, the cab driver, who is the coolest skeleton known to man. He is so funny. Who's he played by? He's voiced by Reno Romano, which I think is, he's a Canadian actor, but I'm pretty sure he's like a comedian, because it's so funny to just like listen to him talk, and like he has like so many bad dad jokes that it's like,
well, even talking about the animatronic, because that actually moves for to 98. Show facial emotion, and mm-hmm. it's crazy to me. Like, that was so good.
Especially for 1998. Yeah, especially for 1998, that was like super advanced for like,
and in comparison,
what they were doing.
Right. And in comparison to some of the other prosthetics they did, which weren't mm-hmm. so strong, it's great.
Yeah, like that one was like one of my top favorite characters because of how well, like, this is way before CGI, kids of younger CGI people. So it was like, they still had some CGI, but a lot of it is like all animatronics. But they did such a good job with Benny.
Yes, they did. Mm-hmm. So then Benny drops them off at grandma's house, and they can't get in because the gate's locked. Mm-hmm. So Dylan says to Marnie, we'll use some magic if you're a witch, and she can't figure it out.
Really?
So they start fighting, and the gates open. And this is my favorite part of the Halloween Town verse magic, is that Sophie just wished for the lock to turn into a frog. Because behind the lock, uh-huh. you see the frog face?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because
you're like, why would she pick a frog? And it's right there. And I thought that was so good. And just like the power of wishing, which we had seen earlier, because she wants to have a cookie and then the cookie floats.
And I was just going to say, doesn't like the cookie float for her?
Yeah.
But again, because they're secret witches and they don't know it. Well, now they do, but before they didn't. So
they end up at grandma's house. And Aggie then sees them, brings them in. And Aggie is working on something. And she's making witch's brew, which I laughed so hard at this, because it's so true to form of modern times. She gets the kids involved. She's making this witch's brew for the staff. I forget what it's called, but it's something to do with Merlin. But she needs a way to light it. So she's making the witch's brew.
What the hell is that name?
But, and you see, it's a box and it says witch's brew on it. But the whole point is it doesn't work. And it's my favorite joke in the entire movie when she goes, oh, it's what I get for using instant. And I'm like, oh my God.
Yep.
It's just fantastic. And you as a baker, of course.
Definitely. As a pastry chef, nothing is as good as coming from non-instant. Although I will say, instant pudding kind of has a, you know, pretty good. But not, you know. Yes. But again, it was the 98th, and it was such like it's a classic, and it's one of those classics that never gets old. The joke
still holds up. The joke still holds up. Oh yeah.
It's all fantastic. Of them, like all of them. And that's when they see the hooded demon, like They learn about the Merlin's talisman. That's what it's called. We meet Luke.
Well, because first they realize, okay, we have to make this like the good mm-hmm. old-fashioned way. So they go into town with Grandma, where yep. we meet Luke. And the reason we really meet Luke, because we've heard him mentioned, Benny happens to mention him mm-hmm. briefly, but
it's town, one of those things where it's like, oh, but it's like you plant the seed, but then it's kind of like, but don't press the red button. So it's kind of like, now you're intrigued by who is this Luke person.
Well, I love Benny says something about how he had like the warts removed or something, and now he's a jerk.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And you're just like, and
he had the warts removed.
It's just such a great little nugget.
Yep.
So Marnie, they go into town. They go to this ice cream shop. They see Calabar again. Aggie talks to Calabar. And while she's talking to Calabar, Marnie sees the flying brooms across the street.
Mm-hmm.
I've had some issues with cheap props before. I give you the sled in 'Twas the Night.
Yep.
These are so on par with that. I'm like not over it.
Yeah, they kind of dropped the ball. It was almost like they just kind of, not that they threw them in there, but they didn't spend any time. Like, it was almost like they spent more time on making Benny than actually like, which I'm glad, because that's like a top-notch character, but like they didn't focus as much on the way the brooms looked. Wait, and again, well, it's 98.
They don't even, like, the costumes are so rich. Like, even the makeup and the hair that they're doing, everything is so rich. And there's, like, a certain color palette to it. And
yep,
it's like
a lot of fall colors, but like deep fall colors.
Well, like, and it's just, it's clearly this world and everything kind of meshes, but these just kind of stand out in a way that's not good to me. Like, you yeah. can tell it was like a dollar store broom spray painted like a neon color with some additional things to make it seem like,
yeah, to make it seem like all fancy and
yeah,
it's magical. It's not a Harry Potter broom.
No. It's not even like yeah, a good like, broom.
It's those cheap ones that fall apart anyway.
Right, it's going to fall apart in 2 seconds and Marnie's going to fall on her ass. Like,
yeah. Which would have been a funny twist, but, you know.
And we've seen,
but I like Marnie, so it's not like I'm saying right. it as an evil thing. I like Marnie. Like,
well, and we've seen like the progression of the brooms throughout the movies got better.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just one of those things where it just annoyed me. And of course, you find out more about yeah. Luke. Other people agree with Benny. He's changed. He's not as nice as he used to be. Something happened.
Yeah.
We also find out that the movie theater is closed.
We'll find out why towards the end of the movie, but
yes. And so Grandma takes Marnie.
And I think Aggie makes a comment about
it. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I said, we noticed that it's closed, but I think they pointed out more because I believe Aggie says, it's either Aggie or Luke says something that like, oh, the theater's closed. Like, it's not supposed to be closed, but it is like, it's yeah. an odd thing that's closed.
Yeah. Cause Aggie's but like, oh, like, I can
we
take
know,
the
we can
the
see
movies.
That it's closed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. Like throws like a little hint in there, like, oh, this shouldn't be closed on a Tuesday afternoon at 1:00.
Yeah. So again, Marnie's at the Brooms. We find out more about Luke. And Aggie and Marnie go on Marnie's first flight.
Oh.
Which the green screen animation, the green screen animation, I am completely fine with. It's so 98. Yeah. Like, I don't care.
It fits with the times. Like, it's such like watching it now, you're like, yeah, that was the 90s.
Yeah.
Late 90s for you. It was like that cheesy, like, oh, we know this is fake, but it fits with the movie just because, like, it's the late 90s.
Right.
We don't have good CGI in the 90s.
And when they come home, or when they come back down, Gwen is there.
Dun, dun, dun!
So Gwen and Aggie get into another fight. Marnie pretty much states she hates her mother.
Mm-hmm. Sophie, which is kind of like a common teen thing.
Yeah. Sophie is just kind of quietly following orders. And Dylan is saying, told you so.
Yeah. He's that like naggy little brother who's like, I didn't want to go in the first place. They made me do it. Like,
right.
Throwing everybody else under the bus.
So Gwen wants to take her kids back to the mortal world. Of course, Marnie now knows that if her powers, if she didn't start using them, she would have lost them forever. And It's just not a good time for Gwen because she's got her teenage daughter yelling at her, saying how much she hates her. She's trying to listen to these attendants at the bus station. Who, it's a two-headed being.
What is it?
Yeah, I don't know. Two guys in like a suit. And they're fighting with each other, not listening to her. And so, is it Dylan who brings up Calabar? Brings up that they know the mayor? I think that's Dylan.
I think it's Dylan because he's like that, yeah. I think it was Dylan that revealed, like, says that they've met Calabar and he's the mayor and a great guy.
They know the mayor, yeah. And Marnie's mad about that. So
Marnie or Gwen?
Marnie, because Gwen wants the mayor to help her get home.
Oh yeah.
So they go into the mayor's office, and we find out more about Gwen and Calabar. They have a little moment of catching up, and he says he'll help her in just a moment. He just needs to go take care of one important thing.
And then isn't that when the hooded there's something about he has to go do something, but then there's something about the talisman going into the jack-o'-lantern. I don't know if that's
not that point yet.
Before?
No,
we're still
above
that.
I forget what happens. That
Gwen and the children see Luke or something like that walking somewhere with Luke.
Yes. So
they sensing that Aggie her. Might be in trouble because she's not her. Yeah.
So this leads to Gwen and Aggie being part of the affected peoples of Halloween Town. Based off of what this dark sorcerer is doing. So they end up frozen. And Marnie figures out when they escape that he can't be around the light. So now the kids are parentless, grandparentless, stuck in Halloween Town. So Marnie says she's gonna fix this. And so they go about starting the spell from scratch, like they had originally intended to. And this, I love this part. So getting these ingredients is such a fun little quest because they need the hair of a werewolf, the fang of a vampire.
The sweat of a ghost. Yep. Yeah, and I think that was it. Hair of a werewolf, sweat of a ghost, fang of a vampire.
I love the way they do all of these. So the hair of the werewolf is actually a hairdresser.
Yeah. He's like a Fabio hairdresser too.
No, and I'm like, wait, is he the first canonically like homosexual put in a Disney Channel original anything? Because just so. The way like he's done as the stereotype. So is it just the stereotype or is he actually? Mm-hmm. Because yeah, either like, way.
Is that who he really is?
Right. And I love like that whole interaction where Marty's just like, oh yeah, I was looking for a job. He's just like, no kid.
Yeah, right.
But I just...
And don't they get the set of the ghost from a sauna? Like, they follow a ghost into a sauna or yes. something? Like, one of those, like, melty things that melt your
so,
fat?
Yeah, so they... it's one of those machines, and they turn it on extra hot. And he goes in, a very obese ghost, and he comes out a skinny ghost.
Yep.
He goes...
I do like how they did the fangs of a vampire though too, because they go to the dentist,
and the dentist like, is get vampire the fangs. Tooth fairy.
Yes, yes, that's where we see the tooth fairy.
That is the coolest looking tooth fairy I have ever seen.
I know. It's kind of like they scare you into like not wanting to lose teeth because this is the tooth fairy you'll see.
Yeah, like just that's a big schnoz.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at Luke schnoz at the end of the end.
We'll get to that in a little bit because I've got some thoughts on that. So,
oh god,
we get all the ingredients, and Marnie can't remember the spell. Mm-hmm. Luckily for her, she has a little witch sister. That likes to make up songs.
Who likes to make up songs with things she hears.
And it works. So they realize they have to put the light inside the jack-o'-lantern at the center of town to defeat the darkness. To
defeat the demon.
Yes. Yep. And we do have to go back because Luke has a change of heart when he realizes that Aggie is going to get hurt.
Yeah, because he does genuinely like Aggie.
Right. So he has a change of heart. He is now Team Marnie in this. And he stops Marnie before things get too crazy. Because the demon is revealed to be Calabar. And he wants to... He wants the creatures of Halloween Town to go back to the mortal world and take over and for it to be like the Dark Ages again.
It'd almost be like, and what I also like too about this, kind of going back to like when we first get introduced to Halloween Town, like all these characters that we see, goblins and werewolves and vampires, they're like nice creatures. They're not like how we see them in like some horror movies where they're evil and they're the villain. Like in Halloween Town, they're like normal people. Some of them are testy. But, like, for most parts, like, the vampires are, like, mad chill, and no one's scary, no one's, like, exactly. creepy. They're just, like, normal people, which I love.
Right.
It made you not afraid of all these, like, other creatures that most other Halloween movies, like, you learn to be afraid of.
Right.
Except, obviously, Calabar / the Black Demon, but that's another thing. He's supposed to be scary.
So he exploits the fact that Marnie is going to try to stop him, and he thinks he's caught her, but it's not. And she gets to the pumpkin and almost gets it. She's right there before he hits her with his magic.
Yep.
And it doesn't happen. So he continues on his tirade. But
I was just going to say, but in a way, as Calabar hits Marnie, we think she doesn't make it, but as we see her passing out from the spell, she conveniently drops the talisman into the pumpkin.
Right, and she hears, she remembers her grandmother saying about you have to wish for it, which is kind of the whole point, and we see that continuously with Sophie. That's the magic of it. You wish for it, and it should happen. So he starts to get defeated. Everyone in the movie theater, because that's where everyone was disappearing to, comes awake, becomes themselves again. And so Aggie and Gwen join the kids, but he's still not defeated yet. So together with the power of all of the Cromwell magic, and this includes the brother, they defeat Calabar.
He's the missing link.
Yes.
Yep.
I love that he believes, like, even though he's seen his own magic, he's like, I'm not, I'm normal.
Like, I'm not, he just wants
to deny it.
Yeah, and I think he does throughout, like, the rest of the series, but, you know, we'll get back to that. Like,
in the third one, he's good with it. He just uses his magic differently. But,
yeah.
Or, I'm sorry, that's the fourth one.
Yeah, how many are there? Four?
There's four.
Yeah. Yeah, but we don't really see Dylan throughout the series use his magic until, like, the fourth one.
Right.
It's very, like, you can tell he's, like, trying to be the normal human in the family and, like, not use his magic at all.
Right. So they defeat Calabar, and Marty remembers that Luke got hurt pretending to be her to take attention away from her so that she could do what she had to. And we see what Luke really looks like. So one of my gripes about Halloween Town is the inconsistencies with Luke. Because,
like,
so in this one, his facial features are very soft. They're very rounded.
Okay, yep.
In the second one, he has very pointed features.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I know what you're saying, yeah.
So, like, those inconsistencies. Yeah. And I prefer the more pointed look on him.
Really?
Yeah. I just
See, I like him. I like him softer, but okay. Interesting. I'll have to rewatch the second one and see.
Yeah, I prefer that look. It's just very
more goblin-y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just
more goblin-y look.
Yeah. But and he says that he wanted to look handsome because he wanted a chance at a girl like Marnie.
Aww.
And I'm like, they're 13! They're 13! What?
But in the 13th year, somebody turned into a mermaid in that movie. So, you know, anything can happen.
That's not even the point. It's that there's, like, this romantic subplot. But they're 13. Yeah. I'm sorry. What?
Hey.
Like, when we talk about the second one, we'll talk about why I prefer Luke to Calabar.
Well, yeah.
Like, even, like, I just... But they're 13! It just blows my mind. That's like 6th, 7th grade. Like, yes, I know we were having boyfriends and girlfriends at that age, but...
Yeah. I think it's more like,
that's leaning a little young. Like, that leans a little young for Disney.
Yeah, that is super young for Disney.
Because usually if there is some type of romance, they're at least 15, 16.
16.
Yeah, so it's on the lower end of the age spectrum. And I don't know, it just kind of threw me.
Yeah, it was weird. But, I mean, you don't really, back then, you didn't really think about it.
Like, why throw it in there? Like, I don't know. But then, everybody gets on the bus. Gwen says for Aggie to join them in the mortal world to teach the girls their magic. And they all go. Because
Dylan doesn't want to learn. Yeah.
So that's Halloween Town. That's it.
That's it. That's really, that's it. How can you go wrong? It's,
I mean, I'm a bit conflicted on it. Like, it's been, for me, like, the nostalgia factor, I think, is the only thing really keeping me enjoying the story at this point. Like,
I mean, pretty good. Yeah, the story's far-fetched, and, like, now as we're older, we're kind of like,
narrative-wise,
they're kind of young.
Narrative-wise, it's okay. I think that certain plot points could have been developed a bit more to give the movie more stakes, like that there are like more consequences if they shouldn't succeed, if they should succeed. Like, it's just a little
lacking. Because it's just more like, because it was just kind of like, all they learned was just like, Calabar was going to, wanted to take over both the mortal realm and Halloween Town. So it's kind of like, him talking about like, it could happen. But like, I think if they kind of touched on him almost showing how he's gaining, I mean, we see how he's gaining control of Halloween Town, but we don't really see the effects of it in the mortal world. So it's just kind of like, I would have liked to have seen kind of how he had already started to take over the mortal world as well as Halloween Town. Just to kind of like give him some back. You know, like.
I don't know. Like, as a story in itself, I'm not sure it could stand the test of time.
True. And I do think Calabar's character needs to be developed a little bit more in this movie.
Yeah,
like they could have worked on his character development,
especially as the big bad. Like, I wish they had spent more time kind of why he wants to invade the mortal world, because it all has to do with Gwen.
If
that were more developed, like, it would make the stakes a little higher, because we know that the dad had passed away. But that's really all we know. And if that right. is going to be the center for the reason why your villain is doing what they're doing, it just you needs need to be like, more established. That, like,
yeah, because all they touched on is how Calabar and Gwen dated in when they were teenagers, and then Gwen went to the real world and met the kid's father, but like. And Calabar's always had this grudge, but it wasn't really like, it didn't seem like they played it off as just like a ex-boyfriend despising the like one that got away, as opposed to like, he's really pissed off and wants to like take over the world.
Right. And like, as a villain, he's lacking because Disney did figure out how to do it better for their DCOMs. And I keep having to go back to Don't Look Under the Bed. Your villain, there's so much mystery behind your villain, the boogeyman. And
yeah,
when you find out, as you're seeing everything go on with Larry, as he himself is turning into a boogeyman, and you realize that, oh, like it's just a forgotten or like, an imaginary friend who got like taken away too soon.
Forgotten about, like.
Right.
Yeah.
That is such a fantastic villain origin story. And it gives such high stakes that this one just, it lacked.
It was almost just like he was being a whiny baby. Like I definitely feel like I agree with you that like, if we are told why the depth, if we find out and we're shown the depth of Calabar's disdain for what Gwen did and how she fell in love with a mortal and how he's held on to this for X amount of years and it just boiled over, we'd kind of understand more, and like it would be more important as to why it's like they have to defeat him. And but just kind of like the way they played it off was just like he was holding a grudge against Gwen, and it didn't really make sense. Like, they didn't really explain why he wanted to take over the mortal world instead of just Halloween Town. Like, he wanted to do both. And I feel like, and we didn't see any adverse effects in the mortal world as he was already taking over Halloween Town, whether that was going to be a second kind of like once he took over Halloween Town, but I feel like if they had added in how it was affecting the real world already, it would have had more like oomph to what Calibre, like you said, there would be more stakes as to what Calibre was doing and why he was doing it.
Right. And again, I have to just bring up, like, Don't Look Under the Bed came out in 99. So it's not that far separated. Yeah.
No, and so, they probably filmed it at the same time, honestly.
But I just, because of that, like, unfortunately, like, I don't think this one holds up as well. Mm-hmm. But what it has going for it is it's superb casting, because it makes you believe in these characters.
Yeah, definitely.
Besides the broom thing, like I said, the set design, the costuming, like it all makes you believe. It's so festive and it's so rich that you want it to be real.
And yeah, you do. Like it's almost like watching Harry Potter and also reading the books, because the books have more details, but like how Disney had come up with just making Harry Potter and the Harry Potter world so real that like you could be like, you want to wait for your letter to Hogwarts when you turn 11. It's like they make it so real that you want to believe in that, you know, you get your letter and you go off to this magical place.
It gives me a similar feeling to the first time I saw Harry at Diagon Alley. When I saw that on film, it's such a warm and magical and biting feel and
like look you could to feel it. How Harry felt. Yeah,
like it just
like you could almost feel how Harry would feel seeing it for the first time. Like they immerse you in it so well.
Yes, and it's spectacular costuming and design, and Halloween Town has a very similar feeling for me in that aspect. Mm-hmm. It's just unfortunately that writing bit. And I don't know if it's just something that ended up on the editing room floor, but it doesn't live up to everything else that this movie brings. I think it gets its sea legs. Like this one is a great launching point for the series. Cause like we said, it's a four movie series. And I think
it gives you enough of the background of how to continue on the story. Like it gives you a good, like you said, it's a good jump off kickstart point for like the background story of Marnie and Aggie and Gwen and Halloween Town. And then they do, I feel that they do kind of get better as the series progresses, like as they go up in movies until towards the end. But I have my own reasons for that, but we'll get there.
Well, like even the last one, it's still got that rich feeling to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it develops even more of that. It's just,
yeah.
But like this one, it's a good start. Its story just kind of loses it. And I mean, that's where I'm kind of ending on this.
Yeah, that's a good place to end.
But I do want to say, like, my nostalgia factor for this movie and for this series, I watch it every Halloween.
Oh, yeah, you have to.
I have since I was 8 years old.
Me too. Every time it comes on, I like, obviously, thank God.
No, I'm sorry. I was 7 when this came out. No, I was 8. October 2008. I was 8.
You were 8 because you turned 8 in July, and I would be turning 9 that next March. So 2008. I mean, we were 8.
98.
Yeah, that's what I meant. 98, 2008, you know, that's a decade.
But it's been such a constant for so long, and there's so much nostalgia that it has to get points for that too. Because how many DCOMs can I say I've watched every single year for over 20 years?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. And I think that's one of the things that like Disney did a good job with this, the writing of it, the characters, the storyline for the most part. But like, it's one of those, like, you watch every year. I watch Hocus Pocus every year. Not that that's a DCOM, but like it's one of those movies that you watch almost like a Christmas movie, where you watch the same Christmas movies every year because, and there isn't a lot of Halloween movies to begin with. So the fact the same one for kids, because you got like Freddy and Jason and all those, but like for kids, where it's like not super scary, but like, still when you were little kind of had that scare factor to it for a little kid, but you know. But yeah, I still watch it every year too. Once October rolls around, I start rotating them out.
But yeah, so it kind of puts me in a weird spot on what I want to rate this. So why don't you go first?
And it's 1 to 10 still, right? Obviously. I think I'm gonna rate it a 9.
Okay.
I'm going to rate it a 9 because, like, again, like you said, the storyline kind of falters in places where it kind of, like, could have been better. But, like, the other factor that is the casting, the wardrobe, the scene designs and all that is really, like, a big pull for me.
I'm going to have to give it a 7. And honestly, I think it's a lot of like the nostalgia is pulling it that high for me. Because I gave a 7 to Don't Look Under the Bed. And I think Don't Look Under the Bed is a far superior movie to this.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
definitely the nostalgia factor for me here is making it a 7. But.
Yeah, there you go.
But that is it. That is Halloween Town. All right, so that was our thoughts on Halloween Town. I had so much fun discussing this one. It is a Halloween staple for me. Like I said, I watch it every single year, so it was really fun to get to explore it a little earlier this year. If you'd like to get in contact with us, you can email us at watchingwfriendspod@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram at watchingwithfriends. And yeah, that is about it for today. I hope you all have a wonderful Halloween. I'm glad I could surprise you with a bonus episode this week. And we will see you all next time. Bye.